Sports Beat on your home of the Irish. 960 AM and 96.1 FM. WSBT.
Martin for three. Got it!
The Clay Colonials win the state championship.
Notre Dame has beaten number one BC. Over the board come the Irish. Cubs win! Cubs win!
You can't put it on the board!
Yeah! Katie Douglas, her shot is up. No good! And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske. Wow. Win the Daytona 500.
The Stanley Cup to the Chicago Blackhawks.
The Irish has upset Florida State. Notre Dame is number one.
Welcome back to Budweiser's weekday sports beat on your home for Notre Dame football and basketball. News and sports radio 960 AM and 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Well, good evening. I'm Sean Stiers along with Indy football insider Eric Hansen from the South Bend Tribune. Darren Pritchett traveling back from Lansing, Michigan with the South Bend Cubs after broadcasting that game in Lansing earlier today, so it'll be Eric Hansen and I here for the first hour. Tyler James will join me at 6 o'clock for the second hour of the show here today. And we've got a ton of stuff coming up for you today on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Week. Eric interviewed Notre Dame and NFL great Joe Theismann when he was in town this week, so we're going to be talking about that here in just a few minutes. Here's some of Joe's thoughts on the current state of the Irish, on Deshaun Kaiser, the whole thing, and we'll also give you another spin on Joe Theismann as well. Tackling a major issue for last year's Notre Dame football team, we will tackle that subject when we talk a little blue-gold game in the second segment of the show. The NFL draft, of course, is tomorrow, and later this hour, Eric's going to tell us what he thinks are the top five things Deshaun Kaiser will bring to the team that drafts him in the My Five Question of the Day. That is later this hour. And then, like I said, Tyler James joins me at 6 o'clock. We'll have some Indianapolis Colts draft talk with Conrad Brunner of 1070 The Fan in Indianapolis. Tyler and I will also discuss Bears draft possibilities. He is one of the few people who will publicly state that he is still a Bears fan. So Tyler will give us some of his thoughts on what the Bears should do. We'll also have a rapid-fire segment covering a lot of different topics, and Tyler will also share some of his Notre Dame football spring observations. Before we get to Joe Theismann, though, Eric, kind of the big local news of the day is Matt Ryan. The big news in media that I think we should probably mention off the top of the show, though, is ESPN with all these layoffs, 100-plus layoffs, and a lot of people from Ed Werder, who's been at ESPN covering the NFL for 17 years, Jason Stark, Jason Stark along with Buster Olney, two of the top baseball guys out there, and he's being laid off as well. And like you were just saying when we were talking off the air before we started, Brett McMurphy, also college football writer, being laid off, and among others, Danny Cannell, Trent Dilfer, a couple of the former jocks, Len Elmore, who's done a lot of games for ESPN over 20-plus years, being laid off as well. So a sad day in sports broadcasting today.
Yeah, a sad day in our industry overall, and a puzzling day, too, where it seems like the pattern here is let's get rid of a lot of the substance, the reporters, the people, the analysts, and keep the hot takes kind of people. But, I mean, it's a shame that anybody would have to lose their job, and so many talented people kind of flooding the market. And ours, both media and sports media, is a weird industry now where not a lot of people have discovered a great, sustainable business model. And so, we're hoping for the next person that comes up with that so we can all copycat after it. But, yeah, very, very sad day. A lot of people that I knew very well respect those people, and it's going to be fewer intelligent voices and reporters out there. And hopefully they find some quick and good landing spots.
And I guess I did say sports broadcasting because what do you think, ESPN, I guess that's the first thing I think of. But you're right, a lot of writers and guys that I mentioned, like Stark and Werder, were multimedia type guy, and a lot of these guys are, but a lot of the dot-com people let go in this whole thing as well. So really sad, and obviously wish them well, and hope things do work out down the line, because like you said, a lot of really good, really talented people out there in this group. Again, as far as locally, probably the biggest news in the last 24 hours, I don't know how big it is, but Matt Ryan announced officially on Twitter last night that he is going to transfer to Vanderbilt. We knew he was leaving, but he said, Notre Dame, thank you for the memories, but it's time for a new opportunity, and that will be under Coach Drew at Vanderbilt University. So Matt Ryan, officially, he'll be an anchor down guy down there at Vandy. Now he'll have to sit out next year, and then will be eligible to play in the 2018-2019 season. And, of course, this opens the door now for guys like John Moody and Nick Jogo, as well as incoming freshman DJ Harvey with next year's Notre Dame basketball team.
Right, and Bryce Drew really had an interesting year with Vanderbilt this year. They made the NCAA tournament and then had the weird ending against Northwestern where
right.
they kind of gave it away, but they played one of the best, if not the best schedule in the country, and that's what got them in the tournament because they had a lot of losses. So it'll be kind of interesting to see what Bryce Drew is building down there in Vanderbilt in Nashville.
So again, Matt Ryan moving on and announcing that he is indeed going to Vanderbilt. That was one of the top schools that we had kind of heard, one of his potential landing spots, and it will indeed be Vanderbilt for former Notre Dame basketball player Matt Ryan. 5:13, Budweiser's weekday sports beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. I'm Sean Stiers along with Eric Hansen from the South Bend Tribune. And Eric, you, as I mentioned, you interviewed Joe Theismann this week. He was in town, took part in the Notre Dame Day. And also,
right.
you talked to him down at Real Services, right?
Right, right. He did a special luncheon for the Real Services people. Was at the Century Center, so I got a chance to catch up with him before his luncheon, after the Notre Dame Day stuff. And I'll tell you what, he looks great. He's 67 years old. He looks like he's 57, and just great energy and always an interesting guy to talk to. Never at a loss for words, that's for sure.
that's always been Joe Theismann. Before we talk about some of the things that you guys talked about this, I wanted to kind of pose this to you. And, of course, our listeners can find your article at ndinsider.com. But everything these days is ultra scrutinized when it comes to media comments, questions, the whole thing between Twitter, social media, ESPN. And, of course, we found that out with some of the comments that both DeShone Kizer and Brian Kelly had recently. The slightest thing can get blown out of proportion. And, of course, and I don't know if maybe some younger people don't even realize this, probably, the younger people who know about Joe Theismann. He, of course, was known as Joe Theismann when he came right. to Notre Dame in the late 1960s. So he famously later changed the pronunciation of his name to rhyme with Heisman in 1971 at the suggestion of another Notre Dame great, Roger Valdeseri. So could you imagine the reaction if you had yeah. something like that happen today? A guy completely changes the name, the pronunciation of his name in an effort to try to win an award or anything like that?
Yeah, it would be complete backlash now. I mean, Twitter would kill him in a day. And not that it was a bad idea at the time, but things have changed so much. You know, back then, you did everything and anything you could to get your name out there for the Heisman. Now it's almost like you have to kind of roll things back. You
yeah.
know, nobody has, you know, are sending out little refrigerator magnets and things of that nature or spending big campaign money because you almost get overexposed. It almost happened to Lamar Jackson last year. Everybody mm-hmm. loved him in September and October. And then people were looking for reasons not to vote for him in November and December. And he still won, but you tend to get, you know, the early front runner where that was a great thing, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago is not a good thing anymore. You want to be kind of the guy that sneaks up later in the season that everybody falls in love with and they haven't discovered your flaws.
Yeah, you talk about Lamar Jackson, really Christian McCaffrey. of course, he ended up with the injury. But, man, you talk about the ESPN machine and just the national hype machine. I mean, coming into the season, it was overkill with McCaffrey early on.
Right. And I think, again, when you have so much exposure, then people are looking for reasons not to like you. Deshaun Watson kind of ran into that a little bit, too, although he had quite a few interceptions. However, I think if the voting was taken after the national championship game rather than in December before the bowl games, Deshaun Watson may have gotten a bump from that national championship performance.
Yeah. Well, and even we've talked about it to an extent with Deshaun Kizer in this whole draft process, because he was so overexposed for so long. And then you start, everyone starts looking for flaws rather than looking for good things.
Right.
They look for reasons to knock a guy down. And it, same kind of thing when you're talking about the Heisman.
Right, right. So, again, you know, you want to be kind of laying low in September and October and then be wonderful in November. And I think you have a better chance at it at that point.
Right. And, again, now, so, Eric, you talked to Joe Theismann this week. And speaking of Deshaun Kizer, he shared some thoughts on him. And here's a quote from Joe Theismann on Deshaun, and specifically the comments that he made that regarded Tom Brady and Cam Newton. So I'll read that, and we kind of get your thoughts on that. And so, according to Joe, I think it's gone off the tracks just a little bit. And Theismann, of course, again, talking about Kizer. I think Deshaun has said some things that potentially will come back and stay with him for a very long time. He's a very bright young man, but Tom Brady's played 17 to 18 years in the National Football League, has 5 championship rings. You don't compare yourself to Tom Brady. He went on and kind of said the same kind of thing about the comments regarding Cam Newton. And then so then Joe says, the thing is, you want to aspire to be someone like Tom. And because you're sort of built like Cam and you run like him, you'd like to be able to accomplish the things he's done. So essentially refining the comments. And again, that's why seeing those comments that he made were so out of character, because he was very refined, very well thought, and very well spoken with the comments when he was here at Notre Dame. So very out of character for all of us when we saw kind of some of the comparisons he was drawing when he made those comments last week.
Right. And the thing about it is, you know, he's tried to, not, I wouldn't say backpedal, but he's tried to clarify maybe the intent behind his comments. I know he did a interview with Jack Collinsworth during the Blue Gold game on Saturday, and I have a transcript of that. But essentially he said, you know, he's going to stand by, but he tried to say what Theismann was saying, that he aspired to be like those people, not that he was at that level at this point. But it's difficult. I think there was some bad spin on what he had to say, and yet he kind of gave people the material to spin badly. And so, you know, I got another transcript today. He was on the Rich Eisen show today, and they want me to look at his comments of him kind of, again, clarifying these things. But it's, again, the big takeaway from me is, in talking to both Mike Mayock and Joe Theismann, Mike Mayock, who's an analyst with NFL Network, is it's not going to affect him up or down. But I agree with Theismann. I mean, it could be a running joke for a while. You know, guys in the locker room are going to tease him about that, and he's going to have to, as a rookie, you know, have to stand up to that and remember that. And there will be probably a few instances where people say, imagine the mind of this and the body of that when it comes to Deshaun Kizer. But
right. The first time he gets on the field, if
right.
he has a bad day,
right.
Cam Newton, Tom
yeah.
Brady, it's going to come up right away.
Yeah, let's say imagine he has the arm of Johnny Manziel and the luck of whoever else played for the Cleveland Browns. And so, you know, from that standpoint, but he's going to have to stand up to it. But other than that, I mean, I'm working on a story tomorrow, and I talked to some people, and I said, is there anything that he could have really done differently in the pre-draft process that would have changed what his outlook looks 24 hours before the draft? And pretty much to everybody I talked to said no. you know, that the only thing that would have changed that would have answered the questions is him going back to school and improving. That you can say all you want that Brian Kelly threw him under the bus, which was garbage. You could say, you know, this comment hurt him, which is garbage. You could say his pro day or his combine weren't that impressive, but people still had questions about 4-8, and they had questions about whether his mechanics would improve with another year of playing. And really, the conclusion that everybody came up with is that he's still a year away, and nothing can change that other than him playing more.
But now I look at a couple of different things when you say that, and I agree with what you're saying there, but okay, let's look at C.J. Procise last year.
Mm-hmm.
C.J. Procise came out first year as a running back, had a great year. Was it in his benefit to stay at Notre Dame and essentially get more experience in college without getting paid, or was it in his best interest to go to the NFL and get paid to essentially get more experience as a running back? And it's the same thing. It's just that we're talking about a quarterback at Notre Dame as opposed to a running back.
Yeah, I'm not saying it wasn't his best interest to come back. I'm saying
it's not
going to change his picture.
Right, right.
For example, with Kizer, again, there's still the thought, and again, the picture changes, but the snapshot he's looking at is Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Jake Browning, Lamar Jackson, all possibly flooding that quarterback market with some pretty, you know, guys that would be potentially consensus quarterbacks. Now, that picture can change. Let's think about this time last year. Who was the hot name of quarterbacks last year? Do you remember?
Carson Wentz.
Well, no. Who was it? In terms of looking ahead a year to the 2017 draft, who was the guy everybody thought was going to be the consensus? He's not now. He's in this draft.
That's a good question.
It was Brad Kaya. That's the guy.
Yeah, that's true.
Everybody was talking about that was going to be the top quarterback in this draft class, and it didn't turn out that way. And so there are no guarantees. But given what that market is shaping up with next year, given that there. You know, he's seen Malik Zaire's career turn on a broken ankle, given the fact that Brandon Wimbush was breathing up his back, and Brian Kelly could certainly turn to him if Deshaun was having a bad day in a hurricane. I think Deshaun probably made the right decision in coming out. The thing about it is, this may turn out to be the best thing for him. Him going either in the late first or second round could turn out to be the best thing for him, that he could go to a place where he has longevity instead of going to a place where he's thrown out there as the face of the franchise, the savior of the franchise, when there's no developmental time for him. So this could end up all coming into his favor. It's just he's not going to have the big financial windfall.
No, and I completely agree with what you're saying, because, again, now let's look at Mitch Trubisky right now. He's only been a starter, so that's really probably the biggest knock on Mitch Trubisky right now. Only a year as a starter. Now, there are some other things. He's got the big arm and all that stuff, but he's only been a starter for 1 year. So if you went back last year and Deshaun Kizer, think if Deshaun Kizer had been draft eligible last year. There's no doubt. Well, I wouldn't say there's no doubt. He would have been right up there in the top 10. Coming off the year that he was coming off last year, same situation with Mitch Trubisky. So now Mitch Trubisky, again, when you look at the Brad Kaya example, even the Deshaun Kizer example, that's why Trubisky has to get out there. But again, Trubisky comes back for another year. Now, he's not going to be as analyzed as Deshaun Kizer, say, because he's not at Notre Dame. He's at North Carolina. But completely stands to just kill himself, Trubisky does, if he does come back for another year. But because Kizer was here, that's a year under the microscope. So even though he really, when you look at all the things that he did and the supporting cast and everything, had a great year, and that's why I'm agreeing with what you say. It was every reason that he should have come out this year.
Right. I mean, if you can have a career where you have longevity versus having that, and again, we don't have the crazy rookie contracts that we had 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So the money is bigger in the first round than it is in the second round. The guarantees are better. But if you could have a long career, if you could get into a place where you have longevity, you have a great situation. I had the chance to talk to Matt Leiner and Brady Quinn, I think the week that Notre Dame was playing USC, I want to say last year, where we were talking about the Bush push game. And I got to talk to both of them about why didn't it happen for you in pro football? And I asked them about the other guy as well. And each of them about Quinn about Leiner, Leiner about Quinn felt like they ended up in a bad situation where they didn't have the opportunity to really develop. There weren't the right pieces around them or the right coaching around them or the right circumstances. So that's an important part. For example, when you look at this draft, do you really want to go to the Browns? Do you really want to go to the Jets? You know, I would think those are the two worst places for a quarterback to land. But right. If you could go to the Chiefs, if you could go to the Cardinals right. or the 49ers, I think, especially for Deshaun, those are tremendous places to end up. I was talking to Scott Wright today, who we do a lot with both on the show and in the South Bend Tribune. He's a draft analyst for DraftCountdown.com. And Scott said, I didn't give one of these quarterbacks a first-round grade. He said, but I think of all of them, I would pick Deshaun Kizer first out of that group. But we were talking about this could really end up being a blessing in disguise for Deshaun, not being a top half of the first round kind of guy.
Well, and that's, I think early on it looked like the Cardinals could be a fallback for Kizer, but now they're talking about the Cardinals could be a fallback for Watson or whoever, kind of as Kizer has fallen to the bottom of that rung, I guess. But I mean, the Cardinals would be best case for anybody because you've got Bruce Arians
right.
and Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, and Carson Palmer all had the best years of their career when Bruce Arians
right.
was there. And then you look at the fact that Palmer is still there in Arizona, and whoever gets that position doesn't have to worry about playing this year because even Stanton is still down there. So if Carson Palmer is hurt, you still have they don't have to worry about playing this year. They can develop for a year.
Right, and there's been some rumblings about Pittsburgh having some interest, and
right.
then you come in under Ben Roethlisberger and watch him for a year, another big body quarterback.
Right. We're going to get to some more of Joe Theismann's comments from Eric's IndyInsider.com article. Also, we'll hear from Brian Kelly. Wanted to talk about tackling, some of the tackling we saw in the Blue Gold game and kind of Brian Kelly's thoughts on it. And Eric and I will give some of our thoughts on it as well. Coming up on 5:29, we will do that next. And Brian Kelly and some of those Joe Theismann thoughts when we return as Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Thank you, Abby. Weather brought to you by Blackthorn Golf Club. Think spring, think swing at Blackthorn Golf Club with the $99 Blackthorn card. Sean Stiers along with Eric Hansen from the South Bend Tribune. Darren. I started to say Derek, I think. Darren Pritchett traveling back with the South Bend Cubs from Lansing. Game here earlier on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. So I'm along with Eric this hour. Tyler James will be joining us in the second hour. We we launched off into the conversation about Deshaun Kizer and his draft after starting out talking about some of Joe Theismann's comments on Deshaun Kizer and wanted to share some more of Theismann's comments that he shared with Eric on his IndyInsider.com article. So I'll read you this on Brandon Wimbush, and then we'll hear from Brian Kelly here in just a few minutes as well. But here's what Joe Theismann had to say about current Irish quarterback Brandon Wimbush. I watched Brandon practice last year, Theismann said. We've had some conversations. Brandon is a physical specimen, very articulate, smart young man, wants to be great. He really understands what being the quarterback at Notre Dame is all about, and I think Tommy Rees, being his coach, helps that as well. And Chip Long bringing in this offense. I live in Memphis as well as Virginia. I've seen the Memphis offense before, so I understand what it's capable of doing and the way it sort of works because I attended practices down there as well, and it's exciting. From Brandon's perspective, Joe Theismann says, It's just about finding a comfort level, continuing to improve every day. That's the conversation we had. Practice is more important than games because the habits you develop in practice carry over into games and you want them to become second nature. So Joe Theismann telling Eric Hansen that. And again, you can check out that article, IndyInsider.com. Really, nothing too pointed there, but I think that's kind of what, pretty much along the lines of what we saw from Brandon this spring.
Yeah, and, you know, they're both New Jersey guys, and I think that Brandon certainly has the kind of mindset that I think would put him in a good position to maximize his talents. He's always been that way. He had a private quarterback coach when he was in high school, Madee Williams, who I think did really good things with him. He made the sacrifice, his mom and Brandon both, mom financially, for him to go to St. Peter's Prep, which was expensive. Brandon, 45-minute commute each way from Teaneck, New Jersey, to go there. Didn't get a chance to start till he was a junior. I mean, he was patient. And just the way he goes about his business, the patience, the methodical way, the thing about Brandon is he's always trying to get better, and I think that's a great place to start.
By the way, I need to get these in before we go any further. I forgot to mention our sponsors earlier. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air, by Harold Ziegler Ford, Lincoln and Elkhart, 2525 Bypass Road, or at z4.com. And, of course, by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. It's coming up on 537 on this Wednesday. Sean Stiers along with Eric Hansen from the South Bend Tribune. So, Eric, the spring practice, of course, ended with the blue-gold game Saturday. We got to hear from Brian Kelly afterwards. We're into the offseason now. So where do the Irish go from here as they head into summer? Well, Brian Kelly, that's one of the thoughts that he shared Saturday after the game, and here's what he had to say about that.
It's hard for me to really assess it. I mean, I have to watch it. I mean, there were some missed tackles out there, but it's, you know, it's a spring game. You know, there was some good solid. Look, I thought if you turned on our film in our first scrimmage, you would have said we lacked physicality. I didn't sense that we lacked physicality out there today. Could we tackle better? Sure. We will continue to work on it and get better at it. But I think what would concern me more is if there was a sense of a lack of physicality, and I didn't see that. We ran through some tackles, and there was some arm tackling going on out there, but I think that's my first reaction to your question would be physicality versus lack thereof, and I didn't see that.
I think the key word is some. They missed some tackles, and there were some arm tackles. You know, we watched all last season. There were a lot more than just some missed tackles in real games last season. Did what you saw in that department there, Eric, did it concern you at all, or just your thoughts on that?
Well, I thought I had seen improvement. I thought when I look compared to them to the Texas game, to the USC game, to even the beginning of spring practice, I saw a team that was a lot better fundamentally. And I would say the front seven especially, I thought, again, they played fundamentally sound. You know, I saw in the practices where Mike Elston, the defensive line coach, would stop practice whenever they were doing something small wrong and make the correction and then have them do it over again. And I think that paid off in the blue-gold game. I thought we saw just better fundamentals. Guys not only tackling better, but being in the right places, using good techniques to get leverage and things like that. Now, is it a finished product? Is it ready to go run over Georgia in the second week of the season and Temple in the first? No, but I think what we were looking for in the spring was improvement, and then there's another step to that improvement that we need to see in August.
Well, and I think even what we see on September 2nd against Temple isn't what we're going to see against Georgia, because that first game you always expect when it's win is really live and you really get going. But, I mean, we knew, and what you said, they're far from a finished product, and that was kind of my point as well. I mean, we knew 15 practices in, they weren't going to all of a sudden magically be this completely different team. And Mike Elko kind of said that himself last week, the day before the blue-gold game. It's like there were a lot of things that obviously needed to be fixed. That's why he's here to begin with. And that's there were enough building blocks that I thought that they were improved. And I went back and I looked at last year's defensive statistics from last year's blue-gold game as a point of comparison. So last year, the 2016 blue-gold game, 4 tackles for loss and 0 sacks. That's by both defenses out there combined. This year, 18 tackles for loss and 11 sacks. So if you want a tangible comparison, again, it's still a spring game and it's still an over-glorified scrimmage and all that, but you went from 4 tackles for loss to 18 and 0 sacks to 11. And you're still, regardless of whether it's this week, last year, or 10 years ago, you're always going to protect the quarterbacks in the blue-gold game. So there are always different rules when it comes to sacks and things like that. So there was just those numbers alone. Now, again, I don't think they're going to go out against Temple or Georgia and get 11 sacks, but there are at least some numbers there that show they're doing something differently and there were strides made.
Right. And again, last year's format was a little bit different. They split up teams both offensively and defense. This year you're going ones against ones. But I think that's impressive for the one defense to get 11 sacks and 18 tackles for a loss against the one offense.
Right.
When you think about who the running backs are, who the left side of the line is, and so forth. Again, the rules were weird because, I mean, Brandon Wimbush should have had like 150 yards rushing and it ended up being minus 30.
That's right.
But again, there were, I think, encouraging signs. And it's just impossible to put, you know, when people want you to predict a one loss record right now, I think it's just so difficult to do that. More difficult than any time that I can remember in the Brian Kelly era, just because my expectation is that there are going to be players on defense that are markedly better in August than they were in April. And if they're not, then my prediction is going to be a little bit different. But for example, I think Nick Coleman has to be better and probably will be better. And I think Jerry Tillery's another guy that I think could have a really good summer and he could come back and surprise us. I think Dalen Hayes, as well as he played, I think there's another level for him. And I think there needs to be. You know, Stuart Mandel from Fox Sports came out with 15 breakout players for the fall and Dalen Hayes was on that list.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame needs him to live up to that list. They need him, people to say, you know what? Stuart Mandel was right, because if he is a breakout player, that's going to be a very good thing for Notre Dame's defense.
Well, and you talk about two point of attack guys between Dalen Hayes and then moving Drew Tranquil up to the line of scrimmage and seeing what kind of difference maker he can potentially be playing up close to the line of scrimmage.
Right. And again, you know, I was telling Darren yesterday, it was strange because we saw in the spring of 2015, we saw Drew Tranquil kind of in that role where it wasn't called a rover, but they would, in certain packages, move him around their defensive formation. And then we get to September and
it's gone.
Yeah, he's back playing man-to-man deep safety. You're like, what happened to that other thing? What happened to that
right
thought of doing that? And you just didn't get a real clear answer. And so with this rover position, there's certainly a commitment to doing that. I mean, there's no backing off that. That, by very definition, is what the rover does.
Exactly. And that's him, Niles Morgan, Greer Martini, both saw good things from them. And so, again, 50% of the defense has been installed to this point, and just like the offense was, it was fairly vanilla. So regardless of what kind of game you're playing in, regardless of who's playing, guys are going to miss a few tackles. So sweating over a couple missed tackles in the spring isn't worth it when they have 3.5 months essentially to get ready now, and when you include all of August, 4.5 months to get ready for the season opener.
Right. I would say the places where you've got to have sure tackling, even in April, are the safeties and so forth. I thought Jalen Elliott did a better job of that. He's a guy I expect to have his foot on the gas this summer. I expect to see a different Jalen Elliott in August. He certainly came on the last weeks of spring because it was kind of a toss-up about whether it would be Drew Tranquil kind of doubling in that role, mm-hmm. even if they could move Drew Tranquil at all. If Jalen Elliott or Devin Studstill was strong enough, he was battling with Devin Studstill. And I think he's clearly set himself as the number one option at that position, but he needs to hit the gas in the summer.
5:46, we're going to take a timeout. When we come back, the My Five question of the day, the top five things DeShone Kizer will bring to the team that drafts him, with the NFL draft set to begin tomorrow night on ESPN and NFL Network. Eric's going to answer that next when Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on 96.1 FM WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is Budweiser's weekday sports beats, My Five Question of the Day on 960 AM and 96.1 FM WSBT.
NFL draft, of course, Thursday night. The first round of the draft is Thursday night. So with that in mind, Eric Hansen will tell us the top five things DeShone Kizer will bring to the team that drafts him, starting with number five, Eric.
Well, I think they're going to get a student of the game, a guy that really likes to watch film, a guy that's going to watch other quarterbacks and study the pro game and really have, you know, the preparation, whether he's playing or not, he's going to prepare as if he's starting.
Number four.
You're going to get prototypical size and you're going to get prototypical arm strength. So you're not going to have to worry about either of those things, that he's too small or that his arm isn't strong enough. You've at least got the physical tools to develop around.
And the number three of the top five things DeShone Kizer will bring to the team that drafts him.
A guy that has a possibility of taking on too much on his shoulders. We saw that this season in 2016 when we had Mike Denbrock as our guest every Monday, that early in the season when the defense wasn't performing well, DeShone probably tried to do too much. And so instead of just kind of sticking to his game, he tried to maybe get outside of what was best for the team. Even though his heart was in the right place, the way it played out on the field wasn't the best, and he's got to get beyond that, stick to what his strengths are.
Number two.
A face of the franchise type player, despite his Tom Brady, Cam Newton comment, he's a guy that 99% of the time is going to say things that reflect very well upon himself and his franchise.
The top five things DeShone Kizer will bring to the team that drafts him. Eric's number five. He's a student of the game. Number four, he has prototypical size and prototypical arm strength. Number three, a guy who could take too much on his shoulders. Number two, he's a face of the franchise-like player. And the number one thing, Eric, of the top five things DeShone Kizer will bring to the team that drafts him.
He's a guy that gives himself a chance to be great. He's got all the ingredients to do it. We'll see if he does. We'll see if the circumstances are such that can happen. But I think he does. Whether he fulfills that prophecy is a different thing. But there's nothing in DeShone Kizer, I think, that you can't fix to put him on the path to being a very good quarterback.
Real quickly, do you think that we've talked about the Pittsburgh Steelers? Do you think a situation like that, now, it would be great for DeShone Kizer, but kind of like that Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, how much is Ben Roethlisberger going to like that if they go out and get a quarterback in the first round and he's sitting here at 35 and he's not too long from retirement?
I don't think he'll have a problem because I think he, in his mind, he'll think that he's much better. And I don't think that he's going to worry about them trying to push him out the door. I think that they're going to feel like he's done enough in his career that, you know, they're going to let him name when the end of the time is for him. So I don't think he's going to be too bothered by that.
And really, kind of, Kizer made the comment about Cam Newton. Ben Roethlisberger's a big guy, too. So stature-wise, Kizer's a little more nimble-footed than Ben Roethlisberger, but size-wise, they're a couple pretty big guys.
Yeah, and it would seem like he would fit in very well in that whole culture and that whole atmosphere, so I'm eager to see where he lands.
Absolutely. We'll be watching tomorrow night and hoping that his name goes somewhere among those first-round picks. It is just about 5:55. We're winding down this first hour. We will be back to wrap up this first hour. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.
This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the Irish. 960 AM and 96.1 FM WSBT.
Here's a home run ball. Going for it is Fuller. He's out there. He catches it. Touchdown, Notre Dame.
Jackson with a spectacular spin move. And now there's no look pass.
Labor Torres.
Kizer look, timing pattern.
Caught. Touchdown, Notre Dame.
Corey Hunter Jr.
Number one goes down at Notre Dame again.
Hour two of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT. I'm Sean Stiers, and joined this hour by South Bend Tribune, Notre Dame football recruiting insider, Tyler James. We're going to be talking a little NFL draft here in just a few minutes. We'll be joined by Conrad Brunner from 1070 The Fan in Indianapolis. Just a minute to talk about what the Colts might do tomorrow. Tyler James, of course, both the White Sox fan, mentioned that as the White Sox capped the sweep of the Kansas City Royals with a 5-2 win earlier today. And, of course, a Bears fan as well. So we'll talk some Bears draft as well. And a lot of other stuff coming up this hour. One of the headlines, Matt Ryan announcing that he's going to Vanderbilt, said on Twitter yesterday, Notre Dame, thank you for the memories, but it's time for a new opportunity, and that will be under Coach Drew at Vanderbilt University. Of course, he'll have to sit out next season per NCAA transfer regulations. Then he'll have 2 years of eligibility remaining, but it'll open the door for some other guys as well. How excited are you, Tyler, about the draft tomorrow? Do you get wound up for the draft?
Not terribly. I'm interested to see what happens, but it's not something that I pay a lot of attention to in terms of who's going to... The mock draft stuff is really the thing that really doesn't interest me too much. So I think that I'm always interested.
So you're over the mock draft, just the real draft?
Right, yeah, yeah. Especially since they lengthened how much time's before the draft. That's been kind of annoying. But I do get kind of interested to see how things play out. It can be a bit of a drag to watch, so that between picks kind of takes too long for me. But I do like seeing how things are going out. And much of it, I mean, it's kind of funny to be against it because I cover recruiting, which can be so hard to figure out what's actually happening and how good those players are. And the same thing with
right.
draft, people grading how good these picks are right immediately after the picks are made and that kind of thing. But it's interesting to see, and especially interesting as someone who covers college sports, to see where these Notre Dame players will end up.
Exactly. And so we'll find out tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, the NFL draft. I'm not as fired up about primetime first round and stretching it out, but I understand why they do it. It's obviously a lot of TV interest in everything. So let's talk a little Colts NFL draft, Colts draft. We've talked a lot about DeShone Kizer and that kind of thing around here. Of course, the Colts, they were 8-8 a year ago. They have the number 15 overall pick in tomorrow's NFL draft. And joining us right now to talk about what they might do, Conrad Brunner from 1070 The Fan in Indianapolis. Conrad, before we talk some draft specifics, the Colts, of course, hired Chris Ballard to replace Ryan Grigson as their general manager in January. What's the kind of general sense that you get for Chris Ballard?
You know, that he's going to be a bit of a wild card. We have no real way to predict because there's no body of work. You know, we know what Kansas City did while he was there, but it was John Dorsey and Andy Reid really calling the shots. So we're going to be learning. You know, it's a learning experience for us to see which direction he's coming from and how he approached, particularly a lot of these wild card players that some very tough decisions are going to have to be made on.
Well, and then the outgoing guy, of course, was Grigson. And the Colts have a lot of current roster needs heading into this draft. And with that in mind, what do you think is the biggest failing that Grigson had in the personnel department in his 5 years there as GM?
Well, that horse has kind of left the barn, and basically what Gregson left behind was a defense with nothing. And so they're very, very, very active. They've been unusually active in free agency, signing just a large volume of players, some just to plug holes short term, some to be key players moving forward. But this is a great defensive draft. And, you know, their two biggest needs are edge rusher, obviously, with Mathis gone. Even though they signed Sheard, he really isn't a pure edge rush type guy. So that's a huge need. And cornerback is a huge need because they really only have one proven starter out there right now, Vontae Davis, and he's in a contract year. So they could use multiple, actually, cornerbacks coming out of the draft.
Hi, Conrad. This is Tyler James. Had a question a little bit about the way the offseason has played out so far for the Colts. Do you think that any of the offseason signings, like a guy like Jonathan Hankins, has really changed maybe some of these needs going into the draft and addressed some of those needs beforehand?
Well, you know, I think people maybe misread the Sheard signing, that because he was an outside linebacker who had some sacks for the Patriots, that he was going to be their edge rusher. And I don't think they view him in that role. He's a guy that can set the edge against the run and do a lot of things and also apply pressure. Simon's the same way. Hankins, I think, was signed because this is not a particularly good draft for interior defensive line, right? So if you really wanted to fill that in the draft, you probably couldn't. That made getting a guy in free agency a little bit higher priority. So they ponied up for Hankins, who, you know, has been more of a 4-3 guy. But let's face it, the defensive schemes, the base defense now, allegedly 3-4 hybrid, that's something that they only play on first down anyway. The rest of the time, it's all kinds of mixed fronts. So, yeah, I think Hankins doesn't impact the draft, but the absence of top-line talent on the interior defensive line impacted the need for Hankins.
Conrad Brunner, 1070, The Fan in Indianapolis. You mentioned edge rusher, and they finished tied for 19th in the NFL last year with 33 sacks. Who are maybe the top candidates they're looking for there, assuming that they're picking at number 15?
Well, the three guys that have separated as sort of mid-round guys as edge rushers are Charles Harris of Missouri, Tack McKinley of UCLA, and Derek Barnett of Tennessee. And they're all a little different. Harris is obviously very athletic, good burst, all that sort of thing. Very, very, has upside and polish, which is unusual. McKinley's a little similar to Harris, although a little bit more of a straight line player with maybe a tad bit more explosion off the line. But he's still coming back from a shoulder surgery in March. Had a bit of a concussion problem while in college. So that, those two things probably would strike him from the list. And, Barnett's more of a guy that was a great college player who isn't as athletic or as physical and maybe doesn't project as well. So in my opinion, Harris of that group is the most likely.
In terms of the other side of the ball, I wanted to ask, it seems like running back is a maybe a position of need with Frank Gore getting towards the end of his career, and I don't know that Robert Turbin is a guy that you're going to count on long term. Do you think that the Colts are interested in finding a running back in what seems to be a deep running back class, and how high do you think they'd be willing to take a running back in terms of draft round?
Your last question was the big one. How high? You know, how high? But I think they've kind of hinted when they used Vic Ballard as an example of a guy they were able to get late in a draft. I think he was a fifth round pick in 12. You know, they said that they'd like to try to find another guy like that. That kind of tells you that they're probably not going to prioritize it in the top first couple of days, top three rounds. So sometime on that third day, and again, it's a smorgasbord. There are guys of all sizes, shapes, and abilities. They're going to be sitting there. And the one guy who everybody's going to wonder about is Joe Mixon of Oklahoma, you know, who's going to be one of those guys with obviously great talent, but also huge questions about his character. Do you roll the dice on him? And if so, how soon would you have to? My inclination is that somebody's going to take Mixon in the second round. And I think the Colts are, that's way too early for the Colts.
Conrad, I just read something saying that Ballard is taking trade calls right now. I think you might have even said it on your station. Isn't everyone taking trade calls about right now, the day before the draft?
Everybody takes trade calls. Everybody makes trade calls. I mean, that's always an easy headline right now. You know, it's one of those, oh, they're going to make a trade. Davis, look, about a month ago, Jimmy Irsay expressed an interest in maybe trading back to get a larger volume of picks. I mean, they've got seven, but all of them are in the first five rounds, six in the first four, which is actually a pretty good spot to be in because they don't really need, let's face it, if you trade back and get more fourth and fifth round picks, what are you getting?
Yeah.
You're getting mediocre guys that are roster fillers, low-budget mediocre guys that are roster fillers, but that's what you're getting. Well, the roster that was left them was a roster of mediocre roster fillers. What they desperately lack are top-end players. You're much more likely to try to move up, and I've heard a little bit of talk about them moving up into trying to move up into the top 10. Not sure who they have their eye on there. A lot of different ways they could go. And I would suspect if they're going to make a trade, they would be better suited to move up than to move back.
You mentioned those picks that they have, seven in the first five rounds. If they get the right guy to rush the quarterback, if they get the cornerback and whatever running back, are they, no one's blowing anyone away in the AFC South right now. Are they a few pieces away from at least being back in contention, or how long do you see this process being for them?
They're taking a much longer term approach than the previous administration. And actually, the previous administration kind of got forced into it. You know, they came in that first year, you know, coming off a terrible season with a bunch of rookies and wound up, you know, winning too many games that fooled everybody into thinking they were better than they were. So they sort of abandoned building through the draft and started trying to sign plug-and-play free agents, and we all know how that worked out.
Right.
This administration's going to be more patient. They're going to be much more committed to building through the draft. And I say it because I think they might be more inclined to take longer-term prospects, maybe even an injured guy. A guy I can't get out of my mind is Sidney Jones of Washington, who's an elite cornerback who you're going to have to wait a year on. If your medical people tell you that he will be back in 2 years, and you can get him in the second round, that's the kind of guy that I think the Colts are well positioned to take. You know, you take him, you wait, and you reap the benefits next year.
Conrad Brunner, good stuff as always. 1070 The Fan in Indianapolis. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Conrad.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
All right. Take care. Conrad Brunner again, 1070 The Fan in Indianapolis with some Colts talk. The Bears, of course, picking higher, Tyler, and Tyler James from the South Bend Tribune, and you follow the Bears really closely, big Bears fan,
yep,
and everything. So let's. I talked about the taking calls, and it's funny because I saw on the same day as I was kind of looking for some extra background stuff on this from the Chicago Sun-Times, Ryan Pace, their general manager, says everything's on the table as far as taking calls and all that kind of stuff. So if you're the Bears sitting there at number three, are you drafting with that pick, or do you give heavy consideration? Because the number three pick, you can get a lot. He was what Conrad was talking about. At number 15, you're probably not going to get as much quality there, or even quantity, as you need with some higher round stuff. What would you do if you were the Bears? Use that pick, or think about trying to leverage it and getting a lot of extra roster quality on the roster.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think some of the consensus that I've read from some of the people who follow the draft and scout the draft, like Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, and Peter Schrager from Fox Sports, those guys seem to say that there's sort of a mix of guys between like 2 and 12 maybe that are all kind of the same level. So if you're moving back, you probably want to move back even within that range and not out of that range to miss maybe one of those guys that you feel is like a top-notch player. But I do think that they're in a spot there that with needs in a number of places where there should be someone that they can feel comfortable taking and feeling that they've got a future playmaker there, whether it's in the secondary, on the defensive line, or even quarterback. I think many people would like to see a quarterback taken by the Bears at some point, and whether they do that will be one of the biggest questions of the weekend in terms of following the Bears draft. But yeah, I think that they'll probably address the defense, that's my guess, but I think it probably just depends on how the top two picks ahead of them play out.
What do you think would be the bigger chip, the number three pick without a name attached to it, or drafting Mitch Trubisky and then dangling Mitch Trubisky to all the ravenous wolves in the NFL?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems to be that it seems that the quarterbacks, that there's so little agreement on who everyone likes.
Right.
So maybe there's a few teams that like Trubisky, but is that enough to take a guy that you don't know if you want and that you have to hope? I mean, it only takes one team to want him that badly to move up, but that would be a tough discussion to have to and a lot of risk you put yourself in unless you felt like that was going to be able to be to happen if you hit that spot. So, and it would be pretty cruel, I think, to Bears fans to draft
to grab him
and then trade him.
See ya.
That would be awfully funny, but we'll see how that plays out. It's going to be very interesting to see how especially the quarterbacks, how it all plays out, because there's so much discussion of whether guys are even worth first round picks and if that even matters, because everyone needs a quarterback's going to draft one anyways.
Well, and to me, the biggest difference, we were just talking to Conrad Brunner from Indianapolis, the biggest difference between the Bears and the Colts is the Colts have the franchise quarterback right now with Andrew Luck, but otherwise, both of them just have a roster full of needs. So as a Bears fan, sits there and watch these guys day in, day out, week in, week out, what's the one need that you see that you're going, man, I hope they go out and get this?
It seems number three seems very high to pick a safety, but I think that's their worst position on the roster. I think they need the most help at safety. So a guy like Jamal Adams or Malik Hooker, both are good players and have played a lot in college and have bright futures ahead of them. I would be comfortable with either of that. I think there's some good defensive linemen out there, whether it's Solomon Thomas or Jonathan Allen, that will be good. So those are the guys that I'm the most intrigued by. And I don't know that they can go wrong with any of those guys, so which is kind of comforting, but maybe there's something else happens that changes the way that plays out.
Yeah, I'm sitting there, and you know, we talk about Trubisky, and Eric and I were kind of talking about it before. I just think that, and this is what happens with quarterbacks especially, anyone who's rated fairly highly, either you're going to get the swooners that are just going to fall in love with you, or you're going to end up being like Deshaun Kaiser and everyone picks you apart to the point that it's just, it's gone too far. And the sample size for Trubisky, and what I was telling Eric is if Kaiser comes out last year, then he's sitting in Mitch Trubisky's spot last year. He's going to be a top five pick if he comes out last year. So there's still so much unknown about Trubisky when you look at just one season as a starting quarterback.
Right, yeah. If Trubisky came back, maybe they'd go 4-8. And
yeah.
He's in the same spot that Kaiser is in now. So I do think that it's tough to figure out how you weigh that all together. I think you have to just go to the physical tools and not to rely on that too much. I obviously, you'd like to have a longer resume to look at and examine, but it all comes down to the basics and being able to do certain things and then applying that to the NFL level.
So if you're sitting there, then are you thinking predominantly defense? And if not, what do they have to do in the second round? If they don't go after a Trubisky or whoever it is in the first round, do you think they've got to? John Glennon's only going to last so long. He's a stopgap guy.
Right.
I mean, you figure they've got to go out for one, especially since you've got all these. You've got essentially six names, and you would think one of them should be there in the second round.
Yeah, that's my hope for how it plays out. I wasn't a big fan of the Mike Glennon signing. It seems like a lot of money for a guy that's definitely average, but maybe I'm wrong there, and they'll prove to be geniuses. But it does seem that it seems worth the risk if you don't love any of those quarterbacks enough to take them at three to see if enough of those guys hang around towards the end that maybe it is a Deshaun Kaiser that you think, well, maybe he slips in the second round, we can get him. And if he doesn't, maybe you trade up towards the end of the end of the first round if you feel like you need to. But that just seems to be more of a safe bet than to go at number three, unless, I mean, if you're really sold on the guy, take him at three, because that's the biggest need always is quarterback. You got to have the quarterback. But it just doesn't seem that anyone is really sold on any of these quarterbacks that much to really make that plunge.
Well, if I'm any of those teams picking in the top five and Trubisky is still there when I'm picking, I'm taking calls and I'm looking at, okay, if I can move down a few spots in the first round and get a second or even a couple of seconds back in return, again, when you're a team like the Colts, the Bears, any of those teams that have a lot of different needs, I think I'm taking a long look at picks as opposed to making that pick.
Sure, but then you're also in the case, well, if someone sees you trading down and they think you're going after a quarterback, then they think they got to trade above you wherever you drop down to.
That's right.
To take that quarterback before you can get him. So it's a big chess game and see who can out with the other general managers when they're figuring out how to choose when to pick and who to pick.
Tyler James from the South Bend Tribune. Of course, he's the Notre Dame football recruiting insider. But Tyler was out there like everyone else watching spring practice for Notre Dame. So when we come back, we'll get some of his takes. Haven't had a chance to hear some of his thoughts about spring football and what he saw out there from the Fighting Irish, both on Blue Gold Day last Saturday as well as over the course of spring football practice. So we'll do that. And still to come after that, a little bit later this hour, we've got some rapid fire where we will get to Deshaun Kizer, we'll get to those White Sox, we'll get to a lot of different stuff in rapid fire later this hour as well. Coming up on 626 Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Thanks, Abby. Weather brought to you by Blackthorn Golf Club. Save up to 80%, including cart every round, every day, all season with the Blackthorn card. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues. I'm Sean Stiers, along with Keller James from the South Bend Tribune and the recruiting insider. And we've had a lot of thoughts from me, from Darren Pritchett, from Eric Hansen over the last few days about spring football. And, of course, Tyler joins us every Thursday for his recruiting segment, and he'll be back tomorrow to talk some recruiting. Let's talk some spring football right now with things just wrapping up at the Blue Gold game. Some takeaways from the game. First of all, Brandon Wimbush. And I think for the most part we've said a lot of good things about Brandon Wimbush. He did have the two interceptions, but any reasons for concern? Anything, any concerns you see after watching Brandon Wimbush this spring?
I don't have any concerns. I do think it's important to I've been at the front of the line of hyping Brandon Wimbush. I said when he was signed that I thought he was the best quarterback that Brian Kelly had signed at Notre Dame, and I think he has a bright future. But obviously, this is still going to be his first year as a starter, so he's not going to take the field and be awesome. Maybe the expectations are higher because what Deshaun Kizer did last season, kind of out of nowhere, and was able to hit the ground running and not have too many hiccups. But the interceptions would be something you have to kind of expect, and turnovers. Come with an experienced quarterback and not putting himself in maybe the best situations when it comes to against the pass rush. But obviously, it's tough to judge that from the Blue Gold game because they're not actually tackling him, and I think he'll have a chance to get away from some of those guys coming at him. But I still have high expectations, so I'm not too worried about it. But I know that some people were either joking or kind of worried on Twitter, I think, during the game when Ian Book looked maybe even better than Brandon Wimbush at times during the game. But I do think, and even Brian Kelly said, it's Brandon Wimbush's job. So I think the bright future ahead, but you got to remember that this is going to be his first season, so there will be definitely some hiccups and some errors there.
Well, I don't know if this is a concern just as much as something that maybe needs to be refined. He even talked about overthrowing it and the intention to overthrow sometimes, and I can see that when you're throwing out, when you're near the sideline, it's better to overthrow than underthrow. But when you're throwing over the middle of the field, and that's the one interception he had down there around the goal line where it was an overthrow. You don't want to overthrow. Yeah, on a 40-yard go pattern, it's okay to overthrow, but on something 20 yards where there's a safety sitting back there, you have to kind of watch out and again maybe refine that some.
Right, and I think that was part. I think he was asked about throwing to those big receivers he has and being able to put the ball in spots where they can get it, but maybe the defenders can't. So, I do think when you're clear across the middle, you want to keep that ball low and eliminate the chances of it getting deflected and ending up in someone else's hands.
What about Nick Coleman? What do you think about him? Can he kind of get things resurrected back there at safety?
I was surprised by how much I liked him at safety this spring. I thought maybe he was just more of a stopgap guy for spring practice and that maybe Devin Stetson and Jalen Elliott would both take over those safety roles. But I think he has a legitimate shot at being a starter in the fall, and I think he could be successful at it. I think he can run in space well. He's got good speed, and I think he seems to be a solid tackler. I think that'll be the one thing we'll have to keep an eye on the most, and obviously needs to keep everything in front of him as a safety. That's the biggest thing. But I'm really intrigued by him, and I think if he can really be a solid, dependable starter, I think that really can kind of change the outlook for Notre Dame's defense, with safety being one of the biggest question marks. If he can really solidify that position, then maybe Notre Dame's defense can make a big jump.
Well, and it is still a question mark, and obviously we didn't get to see Sean Crawford at corner this year. We saw a lot of Julian Love and Jalen Elliott at safety and just some of these other guys that we saw there though, Nick Watkins,
right,
impressive after not getting to see him last year because he was out with the injury. Julian Love, good tackler, because of the concerns, and this is something Darren and I were talking about the other day, because of the concerns at safety, could you see him maybe getting a little project early on in training camp next year?
I think he could play safety, especially because I think he is a good tackle, like you mentioned, and he played some safety in high school as well, because especially in high school, if you're a good cornerback, they'll just avoid you on one side of the field. But
right,
if you're at safety, you can make more of an impact sometimes. So I do think he would be a candidate for that. I think he was the guy that Brian Kelly was referring to in one of the press conferences this spring when asked if there were any corners that would move over, and he didn't name him specifically, but he said that he was a smart player. So I do think Julian Love would be that guy, the next guy that could potentially move from corner to safety. But I think you like what he does at corner, but obviously the cornerback might be one of the most talented positions on the roster right now.
Nobody had more of anything as far as defensive stats than Dalen Hayes, with the exception of interceptions, I guess. But Dalen Hayes, 7 tackles, 4 of them for loss, and 3, air quote, sacks
right,
that he had out there. But is Dalen Hayes, or are we ready to stamp him real deal right now?
I think so. He definitely has that potential, and I think the biggest question mark, just because of his high school career, is whether he can stay healthy and on the field. He had almost all of his seasons in high school were cut short, had multiple shoulder injuries, but he looks like a million bucks when you see him in person. He doesn't necessarily look like your prototypical defensive end. He's kind of a hybrid mix between a defensive end and a linebacker, and I think we'll see him drop in coverage at times, but I do think he's that guy that gives them some speed off the edge and explosiveness that they've kind of lacked in the last couple of years.
Anything you saw from him? We saw good things from him all spring, but anything that on the other side we say, maybe not quite yet?
I do wonder how he'll hold up against the run and when teams want to just kind of go right at him.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I think he made a good play against a zone read in the spring game against Wimbush and whatever running back was
right
in. It'll be interesting to see. I would think he's a guy you wouldn't want to run at him because he can kind of correct his mistakes in such quick time because he is that quick. But I think kind of a power running game right at him might be maybe one of his weaknesses.
Who has you more excited after watching the Blue-Gold game, Dalen Hayes or Drew Tranquil?
I don't know. I think probably Dalen Hayes, but I think Drew Tranquil would be the most drastic maybe impact of changing his game and your
right
expectations for him from everything we've seen this spring. I think it's been interesting to kind of watch what this rover role is in Mike Elko's defense. When you describe the defense as a 4-2-5, I was thinking maybe there'll be more safety play in this hybrid role, but most of what we've seen from Drew has been in the box and making plays behind the line of scrimmage and coming off the edge. It seems almost similar to what James Onuwalu did last year for Notre Dame. So I'm really excited for that. I think that's where he's best, so it makes sense that they would use him in that way. And you're probably not looking at Drew Tranquil as your answer for your pass rush problems, but I think he can provide that in some certain situations for Notre Dame.
Tackles for loss, anyway.
Yeah, especially tackles for loss against the run and being quick and making decisions right away and getting in the backfield, because he's not maybe the quickest safety, but he's definitely quick for a linebacker.
Now, of course, Dalen Hayes had the big game defensively. He was matched up against Tommy Kramer, and this is
right
one of the bigger questions on the offense. Kramer and Eichenberg have been going at it there at right tackle. Do you think that they can count on Tommy Kramer?
To me, just from watching the spring, I've felt that Tommy Kramer will be able to take that right tackle starting spot into the fall. He seems more dependable and maybe an overall better player than Liam Eichenberg. I think Liam Eichenberg is a great player, and I think he has a bright future at Notre Dame, and maybe that's at left tackle after Mike McGlinchey's gone. But I do think Tommy has the ability, and obviously there's just some of the mental things of being able to communicate with the rest of the offensive linemen. He's the least experienced of the bunch there, so he should be able to lean on the rest of those guys to help him out, and just being confident in being able to go against some guys. And going against a guy like Dalen Hayes should be able to help him in terms of getting some practice reps and seeing some of the speed and some size that I'll have to go against.
Coming up on 641, Sean Stiers, along with Indy recruiting insider Tyler James from the South Bend Tribune. Coming up next, some rapid fire from DeShone Kizer and the draft to Jim Harbaugh and the Pope. and a whole lot more. We'll also hit some NFL, some Major League Baseball, the White Sox, all that and more. Coming up rapid fire when we return. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Thanks, Abby. Weather brought to you by Blackthorn Golf Club. Card members pay only $28 for green fees, including golf cart, all day long, Mondays and Tuesdays at Blackthorn Golf Club. Sean Stiers along with Tyler James Rapid Fire coming up here in just a second, 6:46. Don't forget, of course, tonight is also Irish Illustrated Hour night. Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, Pete Sampson from Irish Illustrated will be joining me after 7 o'clock this evening. It's the last show of the spring, so we'll be doing that from 7 until 8 o'clock tonight, Irish Illustrated Hour here tonight on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Rapid fire time, Tyler. Some questions here to get us through about a lot of different stuff. Let's start off. NFL draft, of course, tomorrow. Deshaun Kizer's at the draft in Philadelphia for the first round. Scale of 1 to 10, how much do you like the idea of Kizer going to the draft?
I think 10 on the fact that I think if that's what he wants to do, I think he should do that. And I don't think he should be afraid to do that. If I was advising him, I don't know that I would be as confident in him wanting to do that. But then again, I was thinking about that, and I was like, I wonder if he decided not to go, if people would say, would make fun of him and say he's afraid that he's not good enough or something. Because everything seems to be parsed so weirdly in the draft times.
Yeah,
so.
No kidding.
I would go with a 10. If he wants to be there, I think he knows the consequences that could happen if he doesn't get drafted and how maybe worrisome or nerve-wracking that could be. But I think he's the kind of kid that would take that in stride if that happens.
To me, I know he's an Eagles fan and all that. To me, it kind of depends on what his level of expectation is into the whole thing. If he thinks that he's going to be drafted high, obviously, I don't think it's a very good idea. If he's going to sit in the green room with the cameras on him the whole time, I don't think it's a very good idea. Yeah, yeah. So I rate it pretty low. But I think he, as you said, more level-headed than that. He has more realistic expectation based on how all this stuff has gone. And from what I saw today, he's already visited a children's hospital as well. So as long as he has his expectations in check and he's doing the right things leading up to the draft, so I'd give it a 7, even an 8, just based on all that kind of stuff. All right, speaking of Kizer and quarterbacks, over under 3.5 quarterbacks selected in the first round of the draft tomorrow night.
I'm going to take the over, and that's not a reflection of my feelings about the quarterbacks in this draft. I think there's kind of so many of those guys that are bunched up that there might end up being a kind of run on quarterbacks that everyone feels like, we got to get one of these guys now before they're all gone. So I think that's my prediction of what will happen, but I would be surprised if it went the other way and maybe we only get two guys drafted in the first round.
I think it comes down to how high the first guy, the first quarterback goes, because the dominoes are going to start falling.
Right.
Teams are going to panic after that and want to make sure that they get somebody, especially obviously the teams with the big need for the quarterback. So I'm going to go over as well. And then it also depends. Supposedly the Steelers are really after Kizer right now, and they pick at the end of the round. So with him sort of being that swing guy, but I would go over as well. I think 4 will end up.
Right, yeah. The chances that those teams that are towards the end recognize these guys as good quarterbacks, that if they don't have to play right away, they'll be fine. Maybe that's an ideal spot for them to be drafted.
Yep. All right, here's one for you. Jim Harbaugh presented the Pope with a Michigan football helmet and an exclusive pair of Jordan shoes today at the Vatican. So toss up. Does that endear him to Notre Dame fans, or does it make him hate him more?
You know, I think I don't know that there's anything that Jim Harbaugh could do that would endear him to Notre Dame fans, even if it means meeting with the Pope and taking his team to Rome. But I think that it's just anything that he does, Notre Dame fans will find a way to criticize him. And I think he's drawn deserved plenty of that criticism at times with the way he likes to go about his business. But I'm guessing that they're probably not too hip that Michigan's the team that's going to visit the Pope and it's not Notre Dame.
No, I know. It's like it's got to make him hate him more. I mean, this is the Pope. This is Notre Dame. This
Notre
is
Dame
their guy.
Fan, right?
That's right. It's their guy. And Harbaugh beats him to the punch. So a Michigan helmet sitting over there instead of a Golden Dome right now. And then you throw in the Jordans as well. Do you think the Pope's going to go out and Shoot a little hoops in those Jordans, maybe.
I would really like to know where he puts that Michigan football helmet. That's interesting.
I know. Did you talk about the ultimate throwing shade on Irish fans? Man, of course, Harbaugh would be the one to beat him to the punch, though. Toss up, next one. Who'll run for more yards in 2017? Adrian Peterson with the Saints or Marshawn Lynch with the Raiders?
This was a tough one, so good question. I think I'm going to go with Marshawn Lynch, even though I think maybe Adrian Peterson's probably still the better running back. Especially considering he didn't take a year off. Because I'm kind of curious of how interested Marshawn is in actually playing, mm-hmm. how that's going to play out. But I think if he lives up to what we know Marshawn Lynch to be, I think he'll have more opportunities in Oakland just because I think there's a bigger need for him there than maybe Adrian Peterson at the Saints, and he'll be splitting time with Mark Ingram probably down the line.
That's true. Peterson has Ingram. Lynch has Latavius Murray, who didn't go over 1,000. Ingram actually did go over 1,000. I think it's going to be Peterson, though, just because now he's coming back from a meniscus compared to ACL, MCL, a lot less severe, the meniscus, but he did only have 72 yards last year. Lynch had 417. He was injured in his last year, and that led to his decision to get out of it. But I think that Ingram can take enough load off Peterson to keep him fresh. Later in the year, I think Peterson will still be the main guy. Bulls-Celtics, Game 5 tonight in Boston. Tyler, scale of 1 to 10. Rate Chicago's chances of winning the series without Rajon Rondo.
Well, we talked about my being a Bears fan and a White Sox fan. I'm also a Bulls fan, and I haven't been
figured as much.
Very happy Bulls fan this season. I never liked the Rajon Rondo signing in the first place. But he did play awesome, and I was kind of excited after those first two games, and of course he broke his thumb.
Right.
So I'm going to give him a 4, which is about what my expectations were going into the series with Rajon Rondo. I wasn't expecting what he did in the first two games to actually happen, and they seem to have no idea what they're going to do without him at the point guard position with Jaren Grant and Michael Carter-Williams. Isaiah Cannon played in the last game, so it's worrisome to see how this is going to all play out. I don't know that Jimmy Butler is enough, and Dwayne Wade doesn't seem to be very interested in making too much of an impact either.
That's right. And unfortunately, Jaren Grant just hasn't been able to raise his level to everybody
absolutely.
Else.
Yeah, it's a little disappointing that he was given this great opportunity, although it was unfortunate that it came at Rondo's injury, but for him to be able to have the opportunity with him in a 2-0 lead and coming back home, but he didn't really live up to what maybe people were hoping. But obviously still a young player and got hopefully a long career ahead of him if things turn out right.
Bulls 2-0 in the series with him, 0-2 without him. So I'm giving this just a 2. I think Boston's moving on with no Rondo for Chicago. Next one, White Sox. They've been on a tear, and they just kept a sweep today over the Royals. And three-way toss-up for you. Who'll finish higher in the AL Central standings this season? The White Sox, the Twins, or the Royals?
I'm going to go total homer pick on this and just say the White Sox. I know it doesn't make a lot of sense because I wouldn't be surprised if the White Sox end up trading some of their guys away as the season goes on, and so their team will naturally be worse as the season goes on. But their start has been fairly surprising. I mean, they're only two games above 500, but that's still better than I thought they might be. And they're not... All their players aren't necessarily playing at their best. I mean, they're getting carried by guys like Avi Garcia,
right?
And a really good pitching staff. So, well, I'll go with the White Sox, whether it makes sense or not, just because I'm a White Sox fan. I was just hoping to be able to watch some competitive baseball throughout the year.
I mean, I think right now you've got to be really pleasantly surprised. Not only, and the thing to me is when I look at some of these numbers, not only do the Sox have the best ERA in the American League with no Chris Sale,
right?
They've got the best ERA in all of baseball entering today anyway. It's just a little over 3. The Twins are 4th at 3.39, and the Royals middle of the pack, and the Royals aren't scoring any runs. I'm going with the Twins just because right now between the staff ERA and they've scored 85 runs. Again, entering today, they've scored more runs than either of the other two teams. So I'm going to go with the Twins to end up with a better record by the time it's all said and done.
I think that's fair, and that's probably the safest bet.
But I understand that you would go with your guys. I'm obviously most disappointed in Kansas City. I mean, man, I thought with the pieces, with the lineup together anyway, they could have a little more staying power, but they're going to be right. Selling off by the time the All-Star break
this
year.
Yeah, I didn't know that they'd be as bad as they have been, and especially to get swept by the White Sox in the way they did. That's not a good look.
No kidding. Real quickly, fill in the blank. ESPN laying off 100-plus employees today is blank.
It's sad. That's probably the only word that really applies for me. I think some people are kind of anti-ESPN in some ways because of some of their coverage and maybe some of their decisions, but I think you're looking at this on an individual basis, the people that are losing their jobs, and they have to provide for their families and whatnot. So I think it's sad, and it's a hit for sports journalism because that's obviously a place where a lot of people can go and thrive and get their voices heard.
Among them, Ed Werder, Jason Stark, Len Elmore, Trent Dilfer, Danny Cannell, and many more. Last time out, then back to wrap up Budweiser's weekday sports beat on WSBT. Wrapping up tonight's edition of Budweiser's weekday sports beat, Darren Pritchett will be back in tomorrow night. He was traveling with the South Bend Cubs. Sounded like a crazy one up in Lansing today. He'll be back tomorrow. And then, of course, South Bend Cubs baseball tomorrow night. I'm Sean Stiers, Tyler James, and Budweiser's weekday sports beat brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air, Harold Ziegler Ford, Lincoln in Elkhart, 2525 Bypass Road, or at zford.com. And by Budweiser, great times are waiting. Grab some buds. Tyler will be back on the show tomorrow night about 5:30 and kind of a wrap-up of Blue Gold weekend as far as recruiting goes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, how the recruiting went. Hopefully we didn't confuse anyone on what day of the week it was since I was on the radio on Wednesday instead of Thursday, but I'll be back again tomorrow.
I know you wanted to talk more White Sox. We at least got some in
yeah,
tonight.
Yeah, someone's
got
to represent the White Sox in here, so anytime I come by, I make sure we talk about them.
All right, thanks a lot.
Yeah, no
good
problem.
Being with you, and we'll talk to you tomorrow then. It is just a few seconds away from 7 o'clock, and don't forget, the Irish Illustrated Radio Hour rolls along next into the next hour, WSBT South Bend.